regulation. They're pushing for predictable regulation. And then bipartisan members of Congress are wanting some regulation because they're worried about national security. They have representatives worried about elections and lawmakers worried about deep fakes. So they're on board with a lot of our fears, but I still stand in the space of we need younger congressional leaders because these 85-year-old people don't know what they're talking about by and large. And that is going to be the end of my talk about AI regulation. What are your thoughts on this? You can email me at PDX, P as in Paul, D as in Delta, X as in Xanadu, pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com. PDX Progressive Talk Radio started out as a TV show on public access out of Oregon City, and it was Progressive Talk Radio on TV. So that's why the email. I just haven't had an opportunity to change it yet. pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com is where you can write to me and tell me what your thoughts are around the $10 million movement to regulate AI for the big guys and leave everybody else behind, because that's what this sounds like. That's the show for today. Thank you for tuning in to PDX Progressive Talk Radio and KBOO. Next time, we're going to talk about the holiday season and why buying local is actually an act of rebellion. Until then, keep your feet dry, keep your heart open, and don't let haters grind you down.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
This is our KBOO Fights Back campaign. KBOO knows the importance of community media when we need it most. Help us reach our goal of $75,000 by December 31st. Join KBOO Community Radio for an in-person meet and greet at the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Stop by KBOO on Saturday, December 6th, or Sunday, December 7th from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Meet radio hosts and producers, members of the board of directors, and fellow KBOO community members. Enjoy coffee or tea and light refreshments. Take a tour of the station and make your year-end donation in person. For more information about KBOO Fights Back in-person events, visit kboo.fm/give-in-person-2025. And thank you for supporting Community Radio.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio productions by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience produced at a different location every week. I'm Ursula Rudenberg at Pacifica Radio Network.
When you want to change something, and especially when you fight for your freedom, you must always sacrifice something. You cannot avoid it. Freedom comes with a cost. You must stand up and you have to sacrifice something. Without it, nothing will change. That's the only way.
November 21st is the anniversary of Euromaidan, or Ukraine's Revolution of Dignity. Maidan Lesleleznosti, or Independence Square, is the central city square of Kyiv, usually referred to as Maidan, the epicenter of Ukraine's historic waves of freedom movements. This began in 1990 with the so-called Granite Revolution, a student-led protest that ultimately led to Ukraine's independent statehood. In 2000, protests against corruption were squashed, but then in 2004, the Orange Revolution was against election fraud. And then in 2013, the movement culminated with Euromaidan, or Revolution of Dignity, sparking the final struggle for autonomy from Russia and establishing the democratic government Ukraine has today. This succession of popular protest movements transformed Ukrainians into citizens, built a national moral compass, and finally, with how to fight. By the end of the Revolution of Dignity in 2014, over 100 protesters were dead. The authoritarian pro-Russian president fled to Russia, and Ukrainians created the government we know today. We can ask, what is it like to be in the middle of a real revolution? We're lucky to have an intimate account offered by Operator Starsky, who was in this struggle. Today, he is a Ukrainian veteran, reservist, and co-founder of the Propaganda Study Institute. He has a popular YouTube channel, and here he shares his memories and takes us back to Euromaidan in 2013.
Hello, my friends. Operator Starsky here.
This is the anniversary of the Revolution of Dignity. It's a long story, one of the most important periods of my life. Revolution of Dignity started in November 2013. The reason it started was the corrupted dictator that we had back then, President Yanukovych, decided to sign a trade association with the European Union, and basically people gathered at the Maidan to support this decision. Putin called Yanukovych and said, "No way, you're not going to Europe. You are signing the Eurasian trade agreement with Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan." And Yanukovych switched 180 degrees and decided to sign this Eurasian trade agreement with Putin because he was Putin's puppet. And people started protesting because people in Ukraine for a long time wanted to break those harmful connections with Russia. They wanted to return to Europe because Ukraine traditionally is a European nation for centuries. So who were participants of this protest? Mostly students and journalists. Russia is full of newspaper titles these days that sound like bloody coup at Maidan. No, they're lying. Students, journalists, activists, they went to Maidan to protest against this decision because Ukraine was a democratic country. It was peaceful, it was cool, there was music playing, people dancing and protesting, you know, like Ukrainians do, regardless of all the attempts of the ruling pro-Russian corrupted regime to destroy democracy and things like that. This is when I also came to Maidan to see my friends. So, I would like to say several words about myself back then, 2013. What did I do? I was sitting behind the desk most of my time. I was playing music in my band. I wasn't anything special, guys. I was just a common dude. I didn't really want to participate, but I wanted to support my friends. And I clearly remember this evening when the riot police arrived to Maidan. It was a really, really boring evening. But suddenly, a lot of riot police arrived. Back then, in those days, in Ukraine, there was this special force police unit called Berkut. Berkut is the name of a Ukrainian falcon, and basically, Berkut riot police was a punishing force consisting of goons. Big dudes with zero education who could only fight, they had big muscles, and they were used as a punishing force. Whenever we had a meeting, whenever we had a protest, those were brought to beat up protesters. And I remember that evening, you know, it was boring, it was cold, it was raining, you know, this cold drizzle. And those goons were just standing there at the Maidan, and eventually they just moved away. We stayed there for midnight or something like that, but the boys said nothing will happen tonight. And the majority of our guys went home. Only a handful of student activists remained at the Maidan. And this is what happened. All of a sudden, Berkut, those goons, attacked people and started brutally beating them up. During the regime of Yanukovych, Berkut could stand above the law. They were untouchable. And that's when they started beating up people brutally, bashing their heads, bashing their limbs, breaking legs and arms and fingers, men, women, whatever. And they didn't care. And I believe around 4 a.m., 5 a.m. maybe, I woke up, it was still dark, and I remember that I started reading about it, and I was like, damn, we were supposed to stay there for the whole night. So students and journalists and just common people at the Maidan were beaten up brutally by the riot police. They had a democratic right to stay there to protest, but they were beaten up. So, what happened next?
That very morning and during the day, video footage from this freaking massacre was shown everywhere. And that evening, Ukraine rose up. People gathered at the Maidan and they said, there is no way we let you do those things to our kids, to our friends, to our relatives, and to just common people. There's no way. And guys, you know, if Berkut didn't do anything, this revolution would probably not happen. But because they were so convinced that they can do whatever they want and they will never face responsibility, this is what they faced the next day. Millions of people went on the streets in Ukraine and they said, we are so fed up with corruption, with your goons, we don't want you here anymore. We want Europe. We want to be free. I remember I saw never-ending column of people, like there was no end to this column of people, there were millions of them. So several important things happened that day. Protesters went to where the president's administration office was located, and that is where I saw provocation. This is how it looked like. Military police were standing there, and you gotta understand, those guys, they're not Berkut, they were just conscripts. So-called internal troops, like 19, 20, 21 years old, wearing navy blue darker uniforms, and behind them the Berkut wearing like this blue-gray camo. So they had absolutely different purpose. Berkut was used as a storm force, as a crowd dispersion force. The guys from the internal troops were just like, you know, whenever they had a hole, they would put them into there, so they were pretty much harmless. So those guys were standing there without shields, without any protection, without anything. And what I saw, they were simply beaten up by the crowd. And in the beginning, I was like, what? Like, what's going on? Those are internal conscripts. What the hell are you doing with them? So later I saw, it happened to me personally. There was this big dude wearing a blue and yellow bandana. And there were a lot of big goons wearing same bandanas. And they were pushing those conscripts saying like, let's kick their asses, we can kill them all, and things like that. And those were provocators. In the beginning, they were throwing stones, they were beating them up. And then they easily went around them and they were standing behind them. So the internal conscripts were crying, literally standing there shaking. They were so scared of the crowd. This beating continued until dark. As soon as it finished, the horde of Berkut that were standing far behind those conscripts, not in the front line, no, far behind them, they rushed towards the protesters and literally started massacring everybody. A lot of people received numerous traumas because Berkut was using hard plastic. They could break your bones easily, and they did. A lot of people were arrested, of course. So, several buildings were captured by protesters, because protesters had to accommodate somewhere. Zovnabi Palace, as well as Kyiv City Hall, was captured, and the building of labor unions in Kyiv. In the evening, I went to the labor union building in Kyiv on Maidan, and we received information that Berkut was gonna storm the building, clearing the facilities from protesters. And we were like, oh no. So we started barricading the corridor. I went to this office, I brought the desk and everything that I could use, and we were barricading like on all the floors. And because you know me, I wrote a letter and left it on the desk saying that I'm really sorry for taking your things, but we have to barricade from Berkut. If I have a chance, I will compensate everything. And I left my first and last name and phone, and I left this letter on the desk. But then I realized that we will probably be repressed big time. So I removed my last name and my phone, and I left just an anonymous message. But Berkut never stormed this building. In the morning, I had to disassemble that barricade. I went home, and in the evening, I believe next day, the statue of Lenin was destroyed in Kyiv. So there was a statue of Lenin in the Kyiv downtown, and you probably ask yourself, why the hell is there like a statue of Lenin? What the hell is going on? So the answer to this is really simple, and you must understand this. Ukraine was ruled for quite a while by pro-Russian governments, pro-Russian presidents, all kinds of pro-Russian people, pro-Russian culture, pro-Russian producers, and we were fed up with this because we are Ukrainians, we have our own culture. And Lenin,
sorry, he doesn't deserve to stand there in the Kyiv downtown because Bolsheviks were occupying Ukraine for 70 years, killing millions of Ukrainians. That's why this statue was removed, and it was such a morale boost to us. Guys, you cannot imagine that. But another thing, as I mentioned, we also took control over the Kyiv City Hall December 8, 2013. It became our base of operations. We called it the Revolutionary Kyiv Administration. And this place basically became my home for several months. I was responsible with other guys for the internal security of this location. It was an amazing place. Flags were brought to us by the guests because there were a lot of guests at the Maidan during the revolution. You had the flag of the Netherlands, Italy, and Canada. And people used this city hall and the labor union building and other buildings to accommodate people. People were coming to Kyiv from all around Ukraine, from Crimea, from Donetsk, from Luhansk. There were a lot of people, and when we saw people with flags coming to support us, we looked at them like you would look at Tolkien's elves coming to fight the forces of Mordor. It was that cool. We were patrolling a lot because there were barricades, because if there's an attempt to storm the Maidan, we would have to hold them there at least for a while. I remember my first patrol was in the night. There were those internal troops shivering, you know, because it was cold. And we were standing in front of those internal troops, just observing, you know, and making sure that nobody would run towards them with like Molotov or something like that. Make sure that nobody provokes anything. And I remember we were so cold, and it was like 3 a.m. in the morning. It was really, really cold. We returned back to the city hall, and there was a grand piano. My guys fell asleep, and because there was a grand piano, of course I couldn't just ignore it. So I started playing some blues. And this piano in Kyiv City Hall was really, really famous because a lot of insanely famous people were playing there for the protesters, simply coming there to play for the guys. As soon as the revolution started, self-defense groups called hundreds were formed to protect the protesters from police, because police and law in 2013 had nothing in common, trust me. And another reason why we needed those guys were those goons. When people started protesting, what did the pro-Russian government do? It started bringing pro-Russian people, sometimes just, you know, people who were paid, to Kyiv, to so-called anti-Maidan. And they were usually brought to provoke a fight. In Ukraine, we called them tetushkas. They were like fighting with protesters. So it's a very interesting story because those tetushkas were used quite a lot. Whenever they needed to show this picture, like people are fighting among each other, you know, they would bring hired goons from eastern and southern Ukraine. Mostly they were members of different sports clubs, boxers, wrestlers, martial arts, and things like that. And you can already imagine their level of IQ, right? And their education, things like that. So the very term tetushka comes from this idiot brought to Maidan, basically, to provoke fights. They would destroy grocery stores. They would attack people. They would beat them up, stabbing people with knives. It was their only purpose of being there. And we had to fight them a lot. So you probably understand, basically Russian fascists controlled those goons. I clearly remember a case when those goons beat up a boy. I believe he was like 21 years old. He was with several girls. They ran away. They took a knife and they removed his eye with a knife. They were atrocious.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots with Operator Starsky. One person's on-the-ground account on the anniversary of the Euromaidan Revolution of Dignity that began on November 22, 2013. The pivotal event resulting in Ukraine's final break from Russia. Today, Operator Starsky is a popular YouTube host, a reservist, and Army veteran. But back in 2013, he was one of many young people who organized to protect activists and protesters from deadly government violence.
Scrolling forward to 2014,
Maidan was almost always full. There were days where nothing really was happening, absolutely boring days. Sometimes there would be weeks of doing nothing, basically. We just needed to be there, you know? And I was lucky because my boss let me patrol in the night our barricades that we built specifically to protect protesters against police. In the morning, I would go home and sleep. In the afternoon, I would work until evening and go back to Maidan every single night. We had camouflage to visually separate us from them. We had all kinds of protection. My friend gave me a red helmet and I was like, oh my God, this is fabulous. Because again, fighting Berkut was really tough. I cannot say that this helmet was really useful, but that helmet later saved me on numerous occasions. So one way or another, it was better than nothing. Because those goons, they were big and they would literally damage you as much as they could. Because they needed to inflict fear into you and your guys. People were arrested, people were disappearing. So, approximately 9th of December, they brought a lot of internal troops from all around Ukraine, from Crimea. People were blocking the roads, but one way or another, they broke through those barricades and they arrived to Kyiv. And at some point, they attempted to storm the Maidan, pushing and beating, and we were fighting back, and whole Kyiv rose up. Whole Kyiv. Even despite it was cold night, hundreds of thousands of people instantly left their homes and they arrived to Maidan. Guys, it was one of the most massive battles of the Maidan. You know, every single hour we would sing the anthem of Ukraine. And in our anthem we have words that say, we will sacrifice our bodies and our souls for our freedom. And I was standing there, singing with others, looking at this massive number of black helmets in front of us, and I thought, oh my God, this is how it happens. We can do it here for real. Like, we can literally sacrifice our souls and bodies right here. It can happen anytime now. And it felt really powerful. But eventually they lost. And I remember we were standing there pushing them until dawn and we started seeing everything, you know, and eventually they moved from Maidan. And it was one of the biggest victories. I was so tired and cold. And by the way, leather jackets freaking rock, guys. They're the best armor and it looks awesome. So we celebrated New Year at the Maidan, no provocations, no drunks, and later January, I believe, there was massive clash with the police, and this is the moment when Berkut started using tear gas grenades in big amounts because they were delivered those grenades from Russia, and the Russian grenades were more powerful, and they also had some crazy tear gas. There was battle every single day, 24/7. Eventually, when one of the protesters climbed to the roof, those Berkuts went after him and they literally beat him up on the rooftop and they threw him down. There's video footage of this. We were told that this man died. And this is where we face the first deaths. This is where we started losing men, tortured and killed. The pro-Russian regime used special police units and goons to kidnap protesters. There was attempt to kidnap me as well, but guys, I was lucky. Eventually, Berkut started using shotguns and handguns, shooting at people from distance. Buckshot and metal slugs and rubber slugs, all kinds of munitions that were live and traumatic. And a lot of people lost their eyes. A lot of people received a lot of different injuries. It was crazy. There were volunteers providing protesters and policemen with medical help, and a lot of them were also wounded by this fire. And it was bad. So eventually, around end of January, early February, Berkut started attacking the protesters moving closer to Maidan. We received information that they were freeing up space in prisons for us. And the government adopted a law according to which we were all recognized terrorists. And basically, for participating in the revolution, you would receive as much years as for murder. Eventually, another big and tragic event happened when police set this labor union building on fire. And unfortunately, in this fire, a lot of people died. It was a really, I would say, symbolic building to us because we had press center there, activists, international journalists, they were all there. And police set it on fire. Eventually, those barricades started making Molotov cocktails and started throwing those cocktails at the protesters. So you can imagine how it was. And by the end of February, they started using snipers to kill us. It happened during the last big fight, late February. They used snipers as well as special company of Berkut armed with AKMs, with live munition, to physically eliminate protesters. They started shooting at the people at the Maidan, and sometimes people were protected by thin metal shields that could not stop even like bullets from a handgun, let alone bullets from sniper rifles. Maidan looked horrible. Burning. People were desperate, but at the same time, they were fighting back, no matter what. Regardless of the outcome, they were fighting back. We lost a lot of men that day, and it was horrible. And how do you think? Did it help the regime? No, it didn't. Because despite the fact that people were dying under fire, people were just still going into battle, armed with, like, sticks. And this is how the Celestial 100 was born. Небесна сотня. This is how we call more than 100 men and women, young and old, who were shot by the policemen. More than 100 protesters died because of the sniper fire and because those barricades decided to just rush to Maidan with those AKMs and shoot at the crowd using live munitions. Some of the policemen also died because some of the protesters brought their hunting rifles. 12 or 20 policemen were killed this whole time. So, what happened next? Eventually, police had to withdraw. So, Colonel Kusyuk, this MF, chief of Berkut, together with other goons, ran to Russia, instantly received Russian citizenship, and currently they continue serving the Russian police, beating up Russian protesters. Now, so, dictator Yanukovych ran away, judging from the CCTV cameras, on February 22nd, he ran away to Russia. And he also brought the whole annual Ukrainian budget with him, just in case. And one very important thing to remember, Russian invasion of Crimea started on 20th of February. On 22nd of February, President Yanukovych ran to Russia. So basically, Russian occupation of Crimea began 2 days prior to the end of the Revolution of Dignity. Protesters captured his multiple mansions. That place is called Mezhigirye, with underground kitchen, specifically designed lab to make sure he will never be poisoned, and mini zoo. This is where Yanukovych planned to rule Ukraine forever, like Putin, and currently we have a museum of corruption there. Also, in Mezhigirye, a lot of papers on activists were found. Personal information, where those activists live, what are their families, and things like that, where they work, their numbers, and etc., etc. Also, different documents related to who bribed Yanukovych, how much money Russia gave him, and things like that. There are a lot of very important evidence now used as evidence against Yanukovych. He was so ridiculous. He had a golden bread. There's a picture you can Google, golden bread of Yanukovych. Guys, he was spoiled, dumb mafioso, installed as a president of Ukraine, completely controlled by Putin. I remember when Russia started the invasion, they brought Yanukovych to Belarus because they were expecting to end this war in just several weeks and install Yanukovych back. So, what happened to Ukraine? In 2014, Ukraine had first democratic elections in years. And we elected our president, we elected our government, and oh my God. There was a question whether CIA was involved in revolution. No. I can tell you what kind of people were involved. All kinds. There were hundreds of non-government organizations, teachers, hundreds and hundreds of absolutely different people.
all existing political parties, not like single one. When Trumpists decided to occupy Capitol, that was a coup attempt, right? Because there was one political force. In Ukraine, during the Revolution of Dignity, there was massive number of different people, different political parties and things. Guys, people were standing there sacrificing their lives. There's something Russians and pro-Russians and brainwashed people don't understand. And is the reason why Russians failed to capture whole Ukraine. Because Ukrainians will not give up. Ukrainians cannot be bought. So that's the story. But, you know, even though the Revolution of Dignity was successful and we removed the dictator, which was our intention, we don't really celebrate this day. It's a mourning day. We're mourning a lot of our fallen comrades. One thing I want you to remember when you want to change something, and especially when you fight for your freedom, you must always sacrifice something. You cannot avoid it. Sometimes people sacrifice their lives. Freedom comes with a cost. Freedom is not free. You must stand up and you have to sacrifice. Without it, nothing will change. You have to stand up and sacrifice something. That's the only way. And you gotta be brave, like Ukraine. Thank you for staying with Ukraine, protecting Ukraine, no matter where you are. It's very important. Be safe. Bye-bye.
Many thanks to Operator Starsky for his permission to air this account. This was an adaptation taken from his YouTube channel. You can hear the full narrative and see the photos he took at the time. To find this, you can Google Revolution of Dignity, My Story, Day 637. That's Revolution of Dignity, My Story, Day 637. His commentaries and news updates can also be found on his YouTube channel called Operator Starsky. And that's it for Sprouts. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio Network. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to broadcast on Sprouts to showcase it globally, contact our air